from the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world, covered by 24 time zones and like a blanket by midnight in the desert. I'm Art Bell. Hi there. It's greater than you know to be here tonight. It's amazing to be back tonight. Last night I was sitting here doing the open that I'm doing right now, and buzzers went off, phones started going crazy, and, you know, I didn't stop. I mean, when people start trying to reach you, unless it's some kind of dire emergency, you don't stop doing a talk show open and then, you know, like, pick the phone, say hi. So none of that got to me, so I did my open, you know, happily trudging away, came to a break, finally called Keith, and, well, turns out, let me give you the rules for the show. We have two rules only for this show. No bad language, unless it is to tonight describe the people that cut off the internet down there, and one call per show. But even in the case of describing the people that cut off the internet, you can't use the bad language. I was just kidding about that. Just, you know, like wishful thinking. So, you know, we were not on last night, and the internet actually went off at 8:58. Now, I'm not saying that is a suspicious time, but, hey, that is a suspicious time. You know why? Because in my experience, internet companies, especially the big ones, you know, Phoenix, right, they don't when Keith called, they said scheduled maintenance. Right? Scheduled maintenance? Really? Scheduled maintenance at 9 o'clock? Really? Right in the middle of primetime TV? Really? I don't think so. You know, that's what, like, the guy who answered the phone said. But he probably also said it's sunspots. And then when it wasn't fixed by 7 o'clock this morning, like they said, then they said, well, no, now it's a problem. Yeah, it's a problem. So it didn't come back until 5 o'clock this afternoon. That's the bottom line. And Phoenix, of course, is a point of failure. You could think of it as that, but it's really a point of work. It's where Keith works, and he puts in spots, and he does all kinds of yeoman's work down there. He's really busy, actually. Anyway, it's a big deal, and that's why we weren't here last night. Really, really, really frustrating when you actually are starting a show and then you're told, well, you're not on. So I trudged home with my coffee canister and coffee cup, sort of with my head down. Listen, there is something, going back to what I was starting to say last night, that is so funny on the website right now that you've got to go see it. It's absolutely hilarious. I forget the guy's name. Mike Gingrich did it, and it is. Remember when I described my intuition experience? I've done it a million times, right? Well, somehow he caught the last one, and he put it to a video, a piece of animation that is, I'm telling you, it's hilarious. So when you go to artbell.com tonight, you'll see the guest information. Then below that, you're going to see the breaking news I'm going to tell you about here in a minute. And below that is the animation. Let me put it this way. Keith is not the first person I would list when I would talk about sense of humor. He does a lot of things very well, computers and many things well, but sense of humor, not so much. He's pretty much a business guy, but he said when he watched this, he laughed so hard he couldn't stop, and it went on for a long time. May or may not hit you that way. It did kind of hit me that way, too. The usual thank yous to Telos. Joe Talbot, thank you for the great sound. Keith, of course, the webmaster we just talked about. Heather Wade, my producer. Don't forget, if you've got a guest suggestion, send it off to producer@artbell.com. StreamGuys, LV.net, Sales, Pete Eberhardt, TuneIn Radio, News, our own Amy Martin, as you know. Okay, so I've kind of got some more for you here in terms of, you know, station keeping, if you will. I would like to welcome a new affiliate tonight, and that would be KQQQ in Pullman, Washington, 1150 AM and 104.7 FM. Welcome to the show, you guys. Really happy to have you. There is astounding affiliate information that I can't talk about. This kind of stuff, it kills me. It absolutely kills me. I mean, I know about these amazing things that are going on. I can't talk about it. You know, I'm co-owner of the company, but I know, I mean, it's just I can't talk about it. Mama said something about eggs and hatching and counting and something. So, all right, so this is breaking news, what I'm going to read you. Oh, there's so much news to talk about, it's hard to know where to start. Scientists, this is from theanomalous.com, and I trust them. And we've got our own story up at artbell.com about it. But here's the way theanomalous.com wrote it, and I love it. Scientists at Large Hadron Collider hope to make contact with parallel universe in days. This news has sort of quietly slipped under the radar, buried under the latest Kardashian updates and other useless news, but this is absolutely another top contender for headline of the year, which we've been talking about, that other story. Even though these scientists believe this is possible, and that our gravity, could actually leak into the other universe, which, by the way, is how we think we might detect another universe, gravity, they reassure us that everything will be fine, stating that, well, the worst that could happen is that it could trigger the implosion and destruction of the entire universe. No biggie. Hopefully, if this controversial experiment is a success, it'll only trigger a few more glitches in the matrix. I love that. And spare us the universe-wide destruction. I love the way they put it. Could trigger the implosion and destruction of the entire universe. That's it, guys. Pour the power on. And in fact, the Hadron Collider is going to be at the highest power ever used at the Hadron Collider, just so you know. So I'll be waiting for that. If it happens, I assume we just sort of blink out, which is not a bad way to go, all things considered. Maybe we pop into another universe where we just sort of continue as we were. Briefly looking around the world, or around the country at least, let me see. The U.S. and Russia put into practice Tuesday new rules. These are war rules, right? Designed to minimize the risk of air collisions between Russian and U.S. Coalition aircraft over Syria. We say that it's not that big a deal. It's just an outline. And besides, Russia is helping us to death over there, and they're not bombing the right people. But still, in all, we don't want to bump into them. Millions of fans cried out in joy as they saw the latest trailer for Star Wars. It's called The Force Awakens. I can feel it almost in my bones, right? The Force Awakens in all of us. But Luke Skywalker is not in the marketing clip. How could that possibly be? Could the Force not be with Luke? We'll have to wait and see, I guess. Maybe they did it intentionally just to freak everybody out. Oh, no, Luke's gone. 61 wingsuit skydivers have flown into the record books, creating a diamond-shaped formation while soaring right over California before breaking apart, floating to the ground. The group set the record for the largest such formation Saturday at Skydive Paris, 80 miles southeast of Los Angeles. Cool. Pretty cool stuff, huh? There's a story floating around about Ivanka Trump. When she was 6 years old, this is Trump's daughter, right? She's actually a class act. I'm sure you've seen her on something. Anyway, at six, she had gotten a Barbie for Christmas. while her two brothers had gotten Legos and an erector set. So she grabbed some super glue, locked herself in the bedroom, and built a unbreakable Lego model of Trump Tower. My father scolded me, she said, but never was so proud. And I've got to say that Ivanka Trump is kind of an interesting gal. She's very sophisticated. She's gone to the best schools, of course. And she is a force. There's no question about it. Ivanka Trump is something to behold. So she's extremely literate, and she's going places. Well, she's already arrived, actually. But it's not like spoon in the mouth, you know. This girl has it together. Oh, Vice President Biden is sounding like he may run against Hillary. And he sort of hit at Clinton a little bit. One more thing I want to say, then we'll take a break and do tonight's important business with Dr. Jacobs. We are accepting Halloween ghost stories. This is going to be tough, but here's how you do it. If you've got a good ghost story, we haven't even named the program yet, don't even know what I'm going to call it, send your ghost story with a telephone number where we can reach you at airtime. But actually, no we. It's just me. So I'll have to do it during a break. But if you've got a Class A ghost story, and I mean scary stuff, I want scary stuff, email me at just a very short little summary and your phone number. Send it to artbell@knye.com. That's artbell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at K-N-Y-E, Kilowatt Nancy, Yokohama Easy. Artbell at KNYE.com. Okay, so there you have it. Coming up is Dr. David Jacobs. And this is about no less than an invasion of Earth. Insufficient for, I mean, when somebody says invasion of Earth, it's not like you say, oh yeah, do the show, and then say next. No, we need to hear more, and so we shall invasion. Woo!
Kingdom of Nye, this is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
Don't call yet. We're just getting started here. But thank you, Ross. Welcome back, everybody. All right, and I also don't want to not talk about the megastructure story. It is as big as ever. 1,500 light years away, yes, but scientists believe they have found megastructures. The word they used after they exhausted every other possibility, it was found by Kepler. It is star KIC, KIC 8462852. And the flickering has been interpreted after rejecting everything else as a swarm of megastructures. I know, but this is from legitimate scientists, many of them in different locations, so this story will stay with us while we consider extinction via collider. Oh, God, what a lot of news. And that includes what's coming up. David Michael Jacobs is a retired professor of history at Temple University in Philadelphia. He's been a UFO researcher since 1966, and 73 completed his doctoral dissertation in the field of intellectual history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the controversy over unidentified flying objects in America. He was the second PhD degree ever granted with a dissertation involving a UFO-related theme. He has written and delivered many articles, papers, and addresses on the subject of UFOs and abductions. He has been a consultant to the major UFO organizations from 1977 through 2011. That's 1977 through 2011. He taught the country's only regular curriculum university course on UFOs and abductions, UFOs and American Society, it was called. Since the early 80s, he specialized in the UFO abduction phenomenon. He has investigated over 1,150 abductions with 150 different individuals. And during our last program, as I bring Dr. Jacobs on, we began talking about human-alien hybrids. Now, at some point in the interview, I said, I think, Doctor, you're talking about an invasion underway of Earth right now. And you said it, I didn't. I think that's the way it went. Right, Doctor?
Something like that, yep.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
All right, so when you're talking about an invasion of Earth, as I said earlier, it is not something that you say, oh, yeah, get as much as you can in a couple of hours and then go next and talk about whatever. It's just like, hey, let's go back to this invasion of Earth thing. This is serious. It's very serious. And you should begin by telling everybody it is. In other words, what you're presenting here is indeed an invasion of Earth.
I can't get away from it. It is true. That is what I'm saying. And it's on one hand, I want to tell everybody, I want to scream it from the highest mountaintops. On the other hand, it's profoundly embarrassing, and I sound like an idiot.
Huh. You know, see, that sounds like a rational person to me. You sound very rational when you say that. I understand. It makes you sound like an idiot. We're being invaded. Makes you think of movies, the pod people, whatever.
Right.
So we're going to have to describe to everybody what's going on here. And when you realized that, you know, you were not just talking about abductions anymore, that this was something more serious.
Well, what I did was I expanded the idea, the version of abductions. I expanded the definition of abductions to include that a person is abducted when he's under control by an alien of any sort in real time in any location.
Okay.
So they don't have to be abducted on board a UFO.
Got it.
It could be in a supermarket. It could be anywhere, and they're suddenly under control, and they do what the biddings of this alien, usually a hybrid, tells them to do, or asks them to do, or whatever.
So you're saying in the middle of a vegetable section of a Walmart or something, you could suddenly be plucked away?
Generally speaking, what would happen would be the abductee would take a hybrid. Now, there's obviously a long lead-up to this rather than just at random, but would take a hybrid, a known hybrid that he or she has worked with, and take them into a supermarket to show them, for example, what a supermarket is, how it works, what the food is like, how you would cook certain foods, how you handle other foods, like, let's just say, a carton of eggs, how you check out, how you get change, how you put stuff back in the basket or the cart, and then, you know, go out into the parking lot and put it in the car, stuff like that.
All right, so you sort of jumped ahead to the training that you're talking about now, I believe.
Right.
So let's back up, because a lot of people probably are just tuning in tonight saying, what, invasion of Earth, what? So you maintain that there were abductions that were going on, and that slowly people have started showing up that are human-alien hybrids, yes?
Right. Actually, Bud Hopkins first discovered this back in the early 1990s or late in 1980s, now that I think about it. And he called these beings hybrids. The first time we'd ever seen it was in a woman claimed that she was given a baby to hold who looked sort of half alien and half human. By alien, she meant gray alien. And it was an astonishing case that I had never heard before, and never had he heard of anything like that before. And he said that he called it a hybrid baby. And from that time on, there were lots of cases like that, and we saw them as toddlers, as young, as kids, as older kids, as adolescents, and as young adults and adults. So that became sort of a staple of the abduction phenomenon. Although a lot of people would just go up, would be abducted, and just have table procedures, and then just sort of come back down.
All right, can I interrupt and ask, does this mean, Doctor, that aliens are abducting women, doing some sort of modification to a fetus or something that's early on and implanting it, and then this woman has her child and that becomes the hybrid, or what?
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. Sperm is taken from men, eggs are taken from women. They're taken out into some other place. They are there is a fertilization of the ova, and there is an alteration in that ova. The alteration, my guess, is alien DNA. And once again, if I do not know whether aliens have DNA, I can't make that judgment. I do not know that.
Or altered human DNA.
Or it's an altering of human DNA, but then again, when the hybrids come out looking what I call early stage, they really look like gray aliens with some human features. So my guess is that there's actually something from the gray aliens that is putting into the ova and the sperm that have been fertilized. But you have to understand that one of the things that astounded us when we first began to look at this subject was we understood that these beings were automatically and absolutely and positively and without question going to have extremely advanced technology.
Sure.
Which is what everybody describes, because our technology is brand new and theirs might be just a touch bit older, which might be a million years.
Right.
But what we didn't expect, what just threw us for a loop, was their knowledge of human physiology, biology, neurology, everything human. They were absolute wonders at it. They were amazing.
All right, but doctor, doesn't this make sense? I mean, this has been going on for years. Let's think about it. Not just human beings, doctor, but the cows that have been abducted, the animals that have been abducted. They've looked at their physiology, then finally humans being abducted. Now we have what? We have half alien, half humans, or some portion thereof being alien in humans that are growing up. And so,
right.
You know, in other words, it's been going on a long time.
We don't have the evidence for cows and horses being abducted that is enough evidence to make this a strong case for it. We know that they're interested in them. We know that they have a vague passing interest in a dog or a cat or something. But it's humans that they're focused on. They're definitely focused on humans.
Got it.
And we know that they have been doing this for probably the better part of the 20th century, maybe leading into the late 19th century.
All right. Well, indeed, all of the early abductions, doctor, it did seem to include semen from men. It was embarrassing, actually, for a lot of the stories to come out, and eggs taken from women. We have story after story after story like that. So, you know, that backs up what you're saying. I know it's true. I interviewed Bud Hopkins. I interviewed so many others, including Whitley Strieber, and what you're saying is correct. That's what they have taken.
That's exactly right. That happens most of the time, and it still is happening most of the time. Even though it would be about the last thing that a person would want to say if they were making this up.
Oh, yeah.
It's much easier to say they gave me a message and sent me back and told me to spread the word about X, Y, or Z or whatever, the environment or atomic bombs or whatever it is.
Usually it's help the planet before it crashes, that kind of thing.
Right. So that's a lot easier to say than they took sperm from me or they took eggs from me or whatever. You know, that's there's no reason in this world to ever say anything like that if you're making it up. It just adds an aura of embarrassment, you know what I mean? But in fact, all abductees describe this, and I can say all abductees with a relative degree of certainty, because it starts in childhood and goes into old age.
All right, hold on, doctor. Hold on, you've got to take a break.
Not radio, but it is what's next. To cast your ray of light into the darkness, please call 1-952. Call Art. That's 1-952-225-5278.
That's no joke. We are what's next. Hi, everybody. I am Art Bell. Professor David Jacobs is here. Professor Jacobs is saying the Earth is being invaded. His book, aptly, is called Walking Among Us, and this is serious stuff. Actually, is quite serious stuff. Professor, just a quick off-the-wall question. How old, if they have grown in linear years, how old would you imagine the oldest human hybrid today to be?
Well, the oddity of that is that people do not report elderly hybrids, they, 70 or 80 or whatever. We just don't get those. We might, and they might just look the same as they did when they were 50, for all I know. But we don't know if that's the case or if, in fact, they die early. I would doubt that. Or if they're used for behind-the-scene tasks or if they're just jettisoned into deep space. Who knows what?
All right. Well, I think that you've sort of hit it. You don't hear about older ones. Now, I'm 70. I think I'm safe. But the question is, when this program, you know, goes to when this program began. In other words, if they continue to grow and get older, you would think that whenever this program began, you could sort of estimate the age of the hybrid if they're growing in linear human years, which I think they are.
They indeed are. They appear to grow in linear human years, and therefore they have a lifespan, but we don't know how long that lifespan is and if they're used for other purposes. In other words, the phenomenon of abductions goes back, you know, as I said, perhaps the last quarter of the 19th century, but certainly back to the teens and 20s and 30s and so forth. And so they've been doing this for a long time. You know, another couple of years, it'll be coming up to, you know, maybe even 100 years or something.
Oh.
That means that I don't know whether they've been producing hybrids this whole time. They might just have been producing abductees this whole time.
Well, I think early on they were researching, and then they made changes, and then they started making hybrids, it would seem to me. The research came first.
Yes, that had to be. They had to first come here. Then they had to do research on the planet and on the civilization that they found, and basically the biology of humans.
Right.
And then they had to make the decision that this was a planet that they wanted, that this was a ripe one. This one agreed with them. There was something about it that they wanted.
Well, we're a pretty blue planet. We've got a lot of a lot of water, a lot of good land. We've got a lot of natural resources. So I would think, you know, as you look around the universe, which they're certainly doing with what we're doing with Kepler, they were finding a lot of Earth-like planets, but we seem to be quite special. So,
well, yeah. Who knows how special we are? We might be special there might only be, let's just say, a trillion of us out there. Mm-hmm. We don't know how many Earth-like planets are out there. They're finding more and more that are in the Goldilocks zone,
right,
just by looking through glass telescopes. In 1,000 years from now, if we're still around, they will be finding many, 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 many more. Here's the argument. This is what I call it, the argument for two. You can make the case that we are alone in the universe. The UFO phenomenon and the abduction phenomenon is just a fig Newton of our imaginations. You can make that case. It's a stupid case, but it's been made by scientists, and there is a book called Rare Earth, which talked about how the moon hit the Earth and the Mars hit the Earth and whatever, and the Earth's tilt and the destruction of dinosaurs and the coming of the primates. It was such a whole series of unlikely events that their argument was we're the only advanced technological life in the universe. If you think that UFOs are extraterrestrial and not just mistakes, and if you think that abductions are real and not just mental constructs,
mm-hmm,
then there's at least one other group out there who is abducting us.
Now, okay, that was going to be a question. Before you continue, at least one other group. How many groups do you think may be involved, sir?
Well, here's the thing. Let's just talk about this one first.
All right.
Abducting aliens. Therefore, there are two advanced species out there, us and them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't make an argument for two. That becomes ridiculous. That becomes nonsensical. That's a laugher. If you're making an argument for two, you're making an argument for 2 billion. There can't be just two. You see what I mean? If there's two, there's millions. And I'm probably playing it down by saying that. So you have to assume, you just have to assume that the universe is teeming with a advanced terrestrial technological life, because we've already seen one of them, and that is good enough. There's two of them. There's us and them, and then that means automatically they're all over the place.
All right, Professor, how about this? It seems if there's more than one working on us, as it were, they must be a coalition of the willing, so to speak, because they seem to have the same agenda. I'm not making light of this. I'm just trying to think of, you know, it does seem as though what you're saying with walking among us is that we are being changed in a methodical way. And that would, if there was more than one race, that would require cooperation, right?
Right. But I think that these aliens who are just abducting aliens are the ones who have this planet. This planet is essentially theirs. Now, it is possible that there are non-abducting aliens who literally, truly are visiting us. This is a word used by people who believe in the abduction phenomenon but think it's all wonderful.
All right.
They're visiting, like visitors, and visitors are welcome into our house, you know. But there might be, you know, just curious other ones are flying about, and those might be the ones we see for all we know. But in terms of abducting, all around, this is a global phenomenon, and everybody around the world describes basically the same aliens, the same procedures, the same insides of the UFOs, the same everything.
To my point.
So it seems to be one major unified group that is doing this, that is doing what I call planetary acquisition. They are taking over this planet for reasons that we do not know. And will eventually, I think, supplant humans just through the process of not hybridization, but the process of not only hybridization, but making abductees. Because abductees are intergenerational, which means that one person is an abductee and gets married to a person who's not an abductee, and they have two kids, those two kids will be abductees, and then whoever they get married to, almost certainly non-abductees, all their children will be abductees. And eventually, everybody in the world will be an abductee.
And then it's a done deal. They've got the planet.
It's a done deal. They've got the planet.
All right, all right. Let's back up, Doctor. And don't be afraid to hold back here. All right, let's move back a little bit. A few basic questions. As we look around at people today, how are we to know that we are looking at an abductee? Can we learn to know to see them?
I would say, and I'm guessing here, maybe 90%, 95%, and if I'm really, 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 really conservative, I'll say 85% of all abductees do not know that they're abductees at all. Don't have a clue.
But that wasn't the question. The question was, can we learn to see them, to know them when we see them?
An abductee or a hybrid?
A hybrid.
Oh, a hybrid is different. The answer is no. Just like abductees, you can't tell who's an abductee, you can't tell who's a hybrid. Now, people have said, I've seen this guy, he's got cat eyes, and I know aliens have cat eyes, you know, and I never believed in cat eyes, and cat eyes are ridiculous, until I saw a thing on television. It was an interview with this woman who had cat eyes. And then I looked it up, and it's some horrible ophthalmological problem that leads inevitably to blindness. Oh, my God, you don't want to do that. But now people say, well, you know, they're walking around, they got black eyes. And the answer is no, no, no. Unless they're a boxer, they don't got black eyes. The ones who are moving into the society, who have been coming into the society, look average. They go for the average. They're around 5'9", which is the average height of a male. The females are shorter. They look just the same. They don't look out of the ordinary at all. They don't stand out. Their job is to blend in and not attract attention to themselves.
All right, but there must be something, Professor. What about behavioral traits? What about the political views? Hell, I don't know. There must be something different in some way about them.
Right. Well, first of all, neurologically, there is a difference. It's a slight difference, just ever so small. And that difference is they can control humans totally and completely, make them think, believe, or see, or do anything they want, whenever they want.
All right, so they have the ability to control human minds.
They have a neurological ability that we can only guess at. There's no way we can possibly imagine how they do this, but they do it. And all abductees, all of them, from the very first event we ever found, the Antonio Villas-Boas event, abduction in Brazil in 1957, they all had that quality, all of them.
Well, I don't want to be fuzzy about this. I want to understand this all the way. In other words, you're saying neurologically, whatever it is, they are able to actually control the thoughts or actions of humans, yes?
That is correct, and it's a clandestine phenomenon, so they can make humans forget what happened to them, whether they were in a supermarket or on board a UFO, immediately afterwards, within seconds.
Are you suggesting, Doctor or Professor, that for example, they could make somebody, I'm just going to pick something really wild here, they could make somebody walk into an establishment and open fire with a gun. And then let's say when the police capture them, if they do, usually they end up killing themselves. But, well, okay, let's go with that. So could they make somebody go in, kill a bunch of people, and then dispatch themselves?
I don't know that. I don't know that. But my guess is yes. And there's a little piece in the book, and I wrote this chapter very carefully about abductees being trained to do things that gray aliens and hybrids do. And one of the things that this one woman was supposed to do was, there was another abductee in a room. She sat behind a glass window with a hybrid who was helping her. And she was supposed to, he thought, the hybrid in the room, when he was just standing in the room, got an image in his mind that he was standing on a bridge, and she, her task was to make him jump off the bridge.
My God.
And she could do that. They didn't advance it that far, but it was doable for her with the help of this other hybrid. She was being trained. That was the thing. She was being trained at the time. Yes, they could. Now, there's no indication that the hybrids have that kind of violence built into them. Everybody, there's a gun for every man, woman, and child in the United States, so everybody get their guns out, blow their brains out now. I don't see that as a scenario. Maybe I just like to look on the happy side of things.
No, you don't. No, you don't, Professor. You are the only one I know who looks at things, I think, realistically. Everybody else is Kumbaya City, that the aliens are here to help us. They'll prevent nuclear war. They'll make the crops grow better, whatever. You know, they're here to help us. And you're the only one I know who isn't in that camp, frankly.
I just don't understand that. I just wish my dear friend Bud Hopkins was still alive, who was beginning to suspect that this was going on at the same time, and I would tell him about stuff, and he was hearing stuff also, but by 2009, he had wound down considerably in doing abduction work because he was so ill, and of course he died in 2011.
Can I ask a question, please, regarding sure. Bud, and that is this. How close, Doctor, do you think Bud Hopkins was to concluding what you have concluded?
Well, the difference between us was that he did a kind of a macro study of abductees across the country.
He did a
huge number of people. Most of them only had one or two sessions with him. I worked with a smaller group of people who I worked with sometimes for decades, and I looked at a lot of different experiences that they were having, and I looked at experiences that they would have the night before, or the morning that they came to see me, for example. A woman came in once, and she said she had bent time. And I said, oh, no, I wish I could do that. You know, how do you do that? Then she said, well, she comes from New Jersey, and she gets on the Ben Franklin Bridge, and she knows exactly how long it's going to take her to get here. And she started out really late, and she knew she was going to be late, and she came right on time. And she doesn't remember a whole lot about the trip, but she came right on time. And she bent time, she told me. So we looked at that. And she was abducted. I think they got her off to a side road or something like that from 95. She was coming down. From Route 30, I guess she was on, going across to approach the Ben Franklin Bridge here. And the next thing she knew, she was on board this object. The car was there with her, too, I believe. And they put her down. I asked her about this right carefully. I said, did you pay the toll to get into Philadelphia? And she couldn't remember that because she still had her money ready when she arrived at my house to pay the toll. They put her back on the other side of the Delaware River, on the Philadelphia side, closer to me. And she bent time, and she came right on time. She was only abducted for about a half an hour or 20 minutes or whatever it was. And they just had to do some minor thing with her. But they can do things like that. They follow people. They know where they are. They can find them anywhere. And it's clandestine. It's secret. That's the key thing. Without secrecy, there would be no abduction phenomenon. We would have known about it years and years and years ago. We would have known about it in World War II. We would have found out ways by putting the best scientists together. And you got to remember, Einstein was around then, and Frederick and Teller and Heisenberg, and there were all sorts of major, major, major scientists around who would recognize this as a threat as an existential threat.
All right. Hold on, Professor. Stay right there. We're at a break point. It's a short one, 2 minutes. We'll be right back. They must be in our political and business structure very deeply now, right? Wonderful. wonderful. This is Midnight in the Desert. I'm Art Bell.
Oh, well, you done me, and you bet I felt it. I tried to beat you, but you're so hot that...
Looking up for a place to go. Where the hell is the right music? Getting in the swing. You come to look for me.
Midnight Matters are best handled by those that understand how to move in the darkness, like Art Bell. To call the show, please dial 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
Oh, I know how to move in the darkness, all right. My guest is Professor David Jacobs, and I would say he's putting a lot on the line. He's telling us that Earth is being invaded. That's right. No joke. Earth being invaded by... these hybrids, these creatures, if you will, that look like us, cannot be identified as not being us, and have the ability to control minds. What an interesting way to take control of a planet. Now, I said as we were leaving, and headed to this last break, that by now they would be, I think, deeply infiltrated into our business and political community, in fact, in virtually everything, but no doubt in the important areas, right, Professor?
It depends on what you mean by important areas.
The military-industrial complex.
Well, I don't know. It's for them, everything is a learning situation. In other words, now this is just a group of people I've been working with, and they have a certain age, and so... I don't know what people who are 100 years old now and have not had any experiences for the past, 25 years or whatever. I don't know what happened with them and whether they went through this procedure or whether or not hybridization is relatively new. It started, let's just say, in the year 2000 or something like that. I don't really know that. They don't seem to. One of the things that I noticed early on, even before I started doing abduction hypnosis, but just looking through Bud's files and looking at and talking with Bud and talking with Bud's abductees and sitting in on sessions and all the rest of that stuff, these beings, whether they were insect-like ones or reptilian-like ones or gray-like ones or hybrids of any stripe, they never asked questions about Earth's organizational structures or business structures or governmental structures, never asked any questions about those things. Didn't seem to care.
Maybe they didn't need to ask about that. Maybe their own observations had already told them all they needed to know.
That is entirely possible. My guess was, though, and I still think that this is true, is that we will be living under the structures of the leaders of the group, of the what I call the insectal ones, the insect-like ones, who apparently appear to be the ones in control, the ones in charge.
Right.
That they will have the structures, and when you take a look at what's going on board the UFO, everybody is bred for a task. Everybody knows exactly what they're doing. Everything runs smoothly, from what we can tell. Every once in a while, there's a problem. An abductee will get loose and run down a hallway. They know how to. There's a standard operating practice for them to deal with that. They've probably seen this a million times. And everything runs extremely smoothly. I don't know how this thing is going to be played out. I don't know if they're going to take over the White House or anything like that. I don't know if they'll just control the president or anything like that. And the interesting thing about that, once again, in all these I don't know situations, it all leads to the authenticity of the accounts that we hear from abductees, because if they were making it up, if it was fake, if it was just psychological, they would make up what was going to happen in the future as well.
Sure.
They just make up. The aliens told me that that they were going to sit in the Oval Office, you know. They don't know what an Oval Office is. My guess is they don't know what a president is. They don't know what the name of the country is, the United States of America.
Or there's another possibility, Professor, and that is that they don't care, because the way they're doing it right now, they don't need to care.
Yeah, exactly. You know, most humans don't care. They go about their jobs. They just do their own work, and they know they live in the United States. But they may not vote. Let's just say too much trouble. They go about driving here, there, whatever. And that's sort of what we're seeing in this phenomenon. But I don't know how this is going to be played out. And so the best thing I can do is say that it's happening. And the problem here is that the ones who are moving into apartments, who I call hybrids, they don't know either. All they know is that they were bred for a task, and their task is to live here and not stand out, not attract attention to themselves, and to be here. And they know that sometime in the future, something is going to happen where abductees will be used here on Earth to control humans.
In other words, in mass and simultaneously.
And I started hearing these accounts a long time ago about people who knew that, who were told that when the change, as they called it many years ago, that when
change.
The change comes, this is not abductees' words, this is the words from the gray aliens, when the change comes, these particular humans' jobs would be to stand on the street. There would be panicked humans running down the street, and they're to stand there coolly and calmly and say, it's okay, it's all right, everything is fine, just keep moving this way, everything is fine, and that will be their job. I have a drawing that I show once in a while in my presentations of a woman of a what looks like a middle stage hybrid, who really looks quite alien but also human, pointing with a pointer of some sort to what is actually a street map on a screen, and it points to where she's going to be standing, and here's where the humans are going to be running towards, and at the end of where this area is, they're running towards a giant UFO that's waiting for them.
Professor, maybe this is something I should not bring up, but after what you just said, I believe...
Does it have to do with my mental capacity?
No, it doesn't. I believe when the Nazis herded the Jews into gas chambers, they said, just keep moving this way. And I think actually they played classical music to keep them calm as they moved.
And they also told them that it was just a de-lousing, you know, to get rid of the lights on them, as if they had lights on them.
Yeah.
And, it was the Nazis had mass killing down to a real art, something that is, it's difficult to forgive, you know. But I don't know if things will be played out that way.
It is not something that is forgiven. My point was, the way you were describing the day when it comes sounded eerily, I don't know, kind of like that. Now, I'm not saying that's their...
Yeah.
We don't know their motives, and let me ask you about that. Do we have any clue, anything from any of the hypnotic regressions you've done, anything they've said that gives us some idea of their end motive?
No, we have none. And as I said before, if this was being made up, we'd have tons.
Yeah.
We just don't know. The abductees don't know. The hybrids don't. The hybrids who are moving in, who I call hybrids, to differentiate them from all the rest of the hybrids, they don't know either. All they know is that their job is to be here and to, you know, to work here, to become human, and to not let on that they're anything different. But the real rules, the plan is all done through these, I think, these insectoids, the ones who really look alien, who people say look like praying mantises. And I think those are the ones behind the whole program. Now, they might have others somewhere else in the universe that they are kowtowing to, for all I know. And there's a whole backstory that goes on here that we don't know about. In other words, the hybrids, when people see hybrids in different stages, somewhat human, somewhat not human, somewhat alien, and all that sort of stuff, they wear certain clothes on board. The women wear a beige-colored one-piece dress thing with a three-quarter-length sleeves, no ornamentation of any sort, and the men will wear the same kind of thing, only it's a shirt and pants. And somebody has to make those. Somebody's got to sew them together in some way or do whatever they do. Somebody's got to fit them.
That's very specific, very specific. And this all comes from testimony of abductees, right?
Oh, yeah. I've heard hundreds of these accounts of what the hybrids are wearing. They all wear basically the same thing. But all somebody's got to make them. There's got to be material that's delivered to them. There's got to be beings back there who are sewing them together or doing whatever they got to do to get these uniforms. Not only that, but if you've got human-like hybrids, you've got to have bathroom facilities. They're going to be urinating and all that. And
yes.
That has to be. And we don't see anything like that. Although one time we did see, I didn't talk about a shower once, but that was a little bit of a different story. But and the hybrids have to eat, whereas the gray aliens absorb nutrients through their skin, and most hybrids absorb nutrients through their skin. The ones who get more and more human have to eat through their mouths. So there's got to be food-like substance made for them. And when they come down here, they have to have already purloined, gotten clothes to make them look normal and average here, usually taken from people's rooms, I must say. In one session I did, this guy recognized a shirt that had been missing from his closet, and there was this hybrid walking around with his shirt.
Now,
that's the only time that ever happened. But
all right.
Another one, a woman, when she was a kid, she noticed that her half of her comic books were gone, and she blamed her brother for this and never forgave her brother, even as an adult, for stealing her comic books, and she never found them again. And then she was up on board, and she could see somebody was looking at her comic books.
All right. Let me stop you there, and let me ask you what role, this is very important, abductees have in helping these hybrids we're talking about.
Well, most abductees help them by just teaching them when they're young, when hybrids are young and they're still being formed to move in later on. In other words, some might be too rambunctious and they're culled from the herd. They might attract attention to themselves. Some might have other little flaws but during this period of youth, abductees help them learn about what humanity is like.
All right, this is where I'm lost. This is where I get lost as I think about this. In other words, the hybrids, do they start off on Earth? And if they start off on Earth, then they should be able to learn, as we all do in our youth, what the world's all about. But you're suggesting the hybrids are brought here at a different stage of growth, right?
Right.
And what stage would you imagine that to be?
Young adult, late adolescence, young adult. And they're moving in apartments in twos, threes, and fours.
Okay, got it. Got it. All right, so this is the reason abductees need to help them. They need to teach them about how to live every day, how to go to the supermarket, how to do a million different things that you have to do in modern life, right?
They've already been teaching them about what it's like to live on Earth when they were young on board, when they were 5 and 6 and 10 years old on board.
Right.
And they are sometimes brought to an abductee's house with a caretaker, an older hybrid, and taught what a kitchen is like or what a computer is, what a television is, and things like that. But it doesn't matter. By the time they get here at age 17, 18, 19, they know nothing. There is so much to learn that children learn just through simple observation, seeing a million things a day that is absorbed into their minds that is not in abductees' minds, that they have to learn a tremendous amount, especially interpersonal relations, but a tremendous amount about how to live on Earth. They don't know anything about humor. Humor is not part of their lives. Because they everything is telepathic on board, although they can speak orally when they're here, sarcasm, irony, things, inflections, that's all lost on them, because somebody can say something, and the way that they say it, you know they're meaning exactly the opposite. With them, everything is taken literally until they learn what humor is, or they have to pick up the subtleties of the language that they just that they can't do on board a UFO. Not only that, but they don't know how old they are. They don't know how to treat people who give them. They don't know anything about presents, birthdays. They don't know anything about families. They don't know. They don't know their mother or father or sister or brother or whatever. They don't. They don't know how family interaction is. They don't know what a cousin is. I mean, it's just astounding what they don't know, even though they've been taught constantly, and they are.
You know, I really, really hate to say this, Professor, but, you know, you are describing some people I know. No joke. You really are.
Huh.
People without a sense of humor, people who don't recognize holidays, birthdays, have trouble with these kinds of events. I'm so tempted to name this person, but I won't.
Well, it's you know, I have a photograph of a hybrid, of a hybrid. And I know that if I show this hybrid around, I may be wrong. And then I get sued for all I'm worth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not naming anybody, don't worry. But somebody came immediately to mind when you said that. And I wonder how many people out in the audience went, oh, God, I know somebody like that.
Well, at the same time, though, you have to take a step back and see there's a lot of humans who are really weird also. You know, I would say maybe is the statistics, am I correct here, 99% of all humans are weird? Something like that.
Oh, yeah, sure, easily. Stella says the following. Dr. Jacobs, is this the way the good humans are to be saved? We seem hell-bent on self-destruction anyway. Is this really our descendants, in effect, coming back here from suns in the future to prevent that destruction?
I love that question. I have a theory of coming back from the future, and it's probably wrong, since what I know about science is less than what my cat knows about science. She's a whiz at it, and I'm not very good. So here's what I know about coming back from the future.
Okay.
If they're coming back from the future, that means automatically, and I guess maybe quantum physics or quantum mechanics might account for something like this, it means automatically that the future has already happened because they're coming back from the future. Therefore, it's already happened.
That's right.
Now, can you come back and kill your grandfather? The answer is no. Can you come back and, well, you can, then everything changes. You know, there's a butterfly effect. But can you come back and affect the society just by people seeing you and all that? And the answer is yes. It does affect the society. It has affected our society. It's affected every society in the world, practically. But it affects it in a specific way. And it has to, and it is required to. It affects it in such a way that it automatically leads to the ultimate building of a flying saucer as the years or centuries go on that has the ability to come back in time and visit us. And when it comes back in time and visit us, it affects us in such a way, absolutely and positively, that it leads to the building of a flying saucer in the future, maybe 100 years, I don't know what, that ultimately flies back to us here in the present and changes the way in which we think about the world and this and that, and ultimately leads to the building of a flying saucer, which eventually has the ability to come. This is a loop.
Yeah, got it. I've got it.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
That's why physicists don't ever talk about coming back from the future, because there's a paradox, and that's the paradox.
Got it. All right, Professor, if we're in the middle of the invasion you say we are, then an obvious question is, and one many are asking, what can we do about it? If we decided that we don't like what's going on and we wanted to fight this, how in the Lord's name do we do it?
Yeah, and once again, there's a hell of a lot I don't know that just swamps what I do know, obviously. But here's something. Here's at least something. There's a guy named Michael Menken, and look him up on the Internet if you want. And he makes hats that have that look like baseball caps or World War II aviator hats. And you can wear these at night if you want. And abductees swear that in fact, it stops abductions. It's got a special Velostat lining in it that prevents them from abducting people, because they don't have the ability in some way to control people as much.
Oh, my God. So it's tinfoil hat time here. You're actually sort of talking about that, right?
Exactly right, except that it's baseball cap type thing, which is much better than the World War II aviator hat.
Yeah, but same effect. It's a protective something.
Well, but this actually has a covering that covers the skull. It's not a thing that sits on top of your head. But the thing is, you know, it might or might not. He swears by it. Other people swear by it. And if it affects just a few people, and if it stops a few abductions, this guy figured it out by himself.
It's like preventative maintenance, but you know, how are we going to sell these hats?
Well, it's not that. It's what we need is large groups of scientists and academics who can put their collective brains together and figure out a way to slow the phenomenon down or to stop it altogether. That's what we need. If Mike Menken can do it, presumably.
All right. But Professor, let's go back for a second and talk about the phenomena itself. In other words, do we want to stop it? Should we be afraid of it? Or could it be for our own ultimate good, as she might have suggested in that message I read?
Well, you have to think about just the facts. And the facts are it's global. That means that there's an enormous amount of time and energy and years put into this.
Right.
Tremendous amount. Number two, they're doing it because in some way it betters them. They do not have the milk of human kindness running by the court in every vein. That's a line out of My Fair Lady. they don't have that. They're doing this for their own reasons. It betters them in some way. It benefits them. If it didn't benefit them, I just can't imagine that they would be going through this huge program.
Of course.
And does it benefit us? That we don't know. Do they particularly care one way or another about us? Well, they seem to be relatively either nice or neutral. Unless you do something bad, then they can become very unnice and unneutral, like talking to me, for example, and they can't get people to stop talking to me, and they will use violence if all else fails.
Look, with what you've been saying, if I had anything to do with this invasion, and I had been hearing you speak on this program and or others, and I'm sure there have been many others, I would I'd have you silenced pretty quick, Professor.
That will be my last book. How they tried to find me and what they tried to, and I never met a hybrid, and I'm not like Will Rogers. I never met a hybrid I didn't like, I never met a hybrid, period, and as far as I know, and I've never been abducted, and nobody's ever been in my bedroom, but I had interesting conversations. And here comes, if you think I was crazy before, now comes the crazy stuff.
Proceed.
Through email and instant messaging. However, even though it sounds crazy, when I write this thing, you'll see there's a logical buildup to this, how this happened. There's a logic to it.
Go right ahead.
And I'm not going to go into it right now, but it had to do with, it was an email situation that they've done this with other abductees. They want the abductee to write an email to me telling me that they don't ever want to see me again, that sort of stuff. Or everything they've told me is wrong and things like that. And not knowing that I would be doing a session on this bizarre email, for example, that I got. And so it started that way. And there was a build up to it even beforehand. And it was the most frightening experience of my life, I must say that. It frightened my whole family. Everybody was frightened because of this.
All right, I want to really understand this. You were getting threatening emails?
No, they weren't threatening.
Give me an example, all right? Just do the best you can and give me an example. If it was that terrifying, you should be able to sort of lay it out in some way here.
Well, there are different types of hybrids who come to protect the hubrids, the ones who are living here.
Yes.
And there's a security hybrid who looks human in every conceivable way. You could not tell him he doesn't have any difference in terms of his physical shape and his face as any other person. But he's got a one-track mind only. Doesn't think about anything except security. That's all he thinks about. He is not capable of thinking of anything but security. That is.
So he doesn't look like a linebacker for Green Bay.
No, does not look like that. He looks just like an average Joe, but his only thought is the security of the program. And if an abductee is a security risk, that is to say, talking about this and telling people about it, like me, for instance.
Yes.
She has to be stopped, or he has to be stopped. I was doing a session once with a guy, and on our 10th session, this is a guy with a PhD, he sat bolt upright from the couch, and he looked at me and he said, I shouldn't be telling you this. And I said, okay, and he got up and he walked out, and that was he came to one get-together I had later on, and that was the last I ever saw of him. He never had another session with me. They'd gotten to him. And I've had other people who've told me they shouldn't be telling me this. And I say, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it, and blah, blah, blah. And they keep telling it. This one woman who is who's in the book and is sort of the star of this book, Walking Among Us, they could not get her to stop talking to me. And she was coming down here, and then she couldn't come down here anymore. There was a reason for it, which I'll go into later. But then we started doing sessions on the phone. This was, I think, just pre-Skype, or neither of us had Skype yet. Then they found out about that. And that was bad. Then she was writing emails to me, and I would ask her some questions in email, and she would remember things. Then they learned about that. And the security hybrid then wrote me a letter pretending to be her.
All right, Professor, hold it right there. We're going to break, and this really is a good place to take a very deep breath. He said the most terrifying thing that he's ever faced, and I think we're pretty close to that. So, Professor David Jacobs, and we'll find out all about it when we return.
Take a walk on the wild side of midnight. From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
Oh, you are on the wild side of midnight, all right. Professor David Jacobs is my guest, and I want to straighten something out. Joy in Santa Cruz writes on the computer through the wormhole, Art, he lost me at the tinfoil hats. Joy... He's not the one who said that. I was, Joy. I was trying to inject a little humor into all of this. Same with the Green Bay reference, Joy. Come on now. Listen to who says something. It was not the professor that said that. He mentioned hats, not tinfoil hats. I'm the one who said that. It was, sometimes when you're hearing something really, really rough, and that's just me. Maybe I'm trying to prove I'm not a hybrid, right? Attempting humor a little bit. Professor, there was an apparent abductee, not abductee, I'm wrong, a hybrid, found dead in a car. It was in the news recently. Do you know anything about that?
No, didn't hear anything about it. How would they know that?
There was actually something, I'm not totally clear on it, but I kind of remember this. And somebody will help me out on I'm sure. But, okay, here it is. Lee says, what about the alien-human hybrid they found dead in his car in California? That was on the regular news, and now it's like it never happened. So I also vaguely remember that, or maybe it's been removed from my memory, but there's something in my brain about it. Somebody will help me out here. And then there's one other thing that I'm really concerned about. And I think I might have mentioned this on the last show. I'm not really sure. But do you know the rate at which we are currently producing autistic children, Professor?
I do know that I don't know that automatically, but I do know, of course, that that the autism spectrum has been widened considerably. So it seems that there's more autistic children. There might be the same amount, but now it includes Asperger's and others.
There is more by a great margin. It's down to like 1 in 58 or something in males in the U.S. It's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I have no idea what's going on. It was 1 in 300, then it was 250, and then 200, and then 100, and the last I heard was 1 in 58 male children.
Gosh, that's like an awful lot.
it's unbelievable, actually. Professor, let's go to where we left off, and that is the email you were telling us about, the most terrifying thing.
I was hoping you'd forget.
Sorry.
He wrote me an email in the guise of her saying that, whatever I have... He started out by calling me David, and whatever I've told you is wrong. You're not to believe anything I say, something like that. And I said, "Well, of course I don't. I don't ever believe. I mean, when that she never called me David in her life. She's always called me Dave. First of all, but the thing was is that this was not her writing, and I literally my hair stood on end, and." I asked him, I knew it was this guy writing, and there's a lead up to that, how he did this, too. There's stories relating to this. He just didn't know how to do it. I won't go into it, but she had to teach him how to do this. But, and I said, but why are you saying that? And then I tried to engage this person in conversation. I engaged him a little bit, and finally he said something to the point of, if you don't stop talking with her, he intimated that bad things were going to happen to her, that violence would happen to her. And I just said, well, I don't want to see her hurt. In other words, he dropped his pretense of being her.
Wow.
And started to talk about her. And so we did it in a way that was, we went to instant messaging.
Oh.
So he could remove everything immediately, all the conversation could be removed immediately, even if somebody came into her bedroom while in the middle of it. She she could just press, so she could eliminate, and they didn't know anything about this instant messaging. And then later on, they learned about that too, and then it went on, and eventually they wanted her to tell them how to get to me, and this was very frightening. And my family and I finally went on vacation in Cape Cod, and I felt safe there, and they were still trying to find me, and it just went on and on and on. In the end, it turned out okay, but in the end, I wound up having, in the book, there's this character named Jamie, who's a hybrid, who's with this woman named Betsy. And Jamie was always reasonable. And I wound up having a series of conversations with Jamie, who was not a security hybrid and who had a much broader range of interests and so forth. And I had 8 conversations. Each one was somewhat astonishing, some lasting for as long as 4 hours long, starting at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
And which shows you a little something about their sleep cycle, incidentally. Hubers don't sleep as we do. They have a much, much, much shorter sleep cycle, maybe only a couple of hours.
Really?
And so...
any other... now, see, earlier, when I asked you for differences, you didn't come up with much, but now you're telling me they have a shorter sleep cycle by a lot.
I think so. One person's a hybrid who they slept in a tent, and the guy would go into this sort of very light sleep for a few hours or something like that, and he explained that he really didn't need sleep like we do, and to spend all night talking to me means, without ever saying, you know, I'm getting a little tired now, I think I better go, nothing like that ever escaped from this guy's lips. He had all the energy in the world.
All right, Professor, hold on just a second. We have got to take calls. We could and might go the rest of the program without it, but I'm not going to let that happen. So let me quickly give out the numbers, and you're welcome to begin to join the conversation because I know you want to. So we are, here's our public number. It's area code 952-225-5278. Once again, dial a 1 and then 952-225-5278. You can reach us on Skype, of course. In North America, it's MITD51. Add us as a contact, MITD51, and then we'll be in your contact list. Outside the United States, it's MITD55. It's MITD55 outside the U.S. All right, that all said, Professor, you're back on. I just wanted to let them know they could begin calling.
Well, if they do call, it's very difficult for me to tell them what has happened to them, if they saw something or if they had some experience. Ethically, I can't really say what happened to them, so it's not something that I can do.
All right. We'll keep that in mind. They're hearing you now. Any other qualifications if they call?
No, that's it.
Okay. Professor, you do realize, right, that you've got your professional neck out a mile and a half here, right?
Well, you know, I'm elderly now, as they say, and yes. I'm retired, and my professional neck has been cut off a long time ago. I'm in for the long haul now. And besides that, I'm an academic. I go where the evidence leads me. Even though I kick and scream while en route, and I hate it. I don't like what people are telling me. I used to tell people not to tell me anything wrong, and I would give them anything bad. I would give them a direct, in hypnosis, a direct, no, this, although it doesn't mean anything, direct command. I don't want you to say anything bad.
Well, look, I am personally beholden to you for coming out this way. I seriously mean that. I think it's a very brave thing for you to do, very brave. And
listen, the point was that when people tell me their story, they couldn't care less what I said. They just start telling me what's happening to them, whether I said, don't tell me anything that I don't want to hear, or anything like that. And I did that as a just as a test to see whether or not they would respond to something like that. And nobody responded to that. They just went, they were getting to the bottom of what happened to them. They didn't care about me, you know. So,
people want it that way. All right, we got to do this, so let's do it. Somebody with the cute name of Starry Messenger, you're on the air.
Roswell's art, Mr. Jacobs, and all the hubrids out there.
That's a doctor or a Professor Jacobs.
Oh, sorry about that. Well, hey, my question is, you hear about these abduction stories or encounters that are somewhat sexual in nature. How is this happening exactly? And could this also be suggesting a telepathic link, a virgin birth of sorts scenario? And might this be a reason why we never see aliens with recognizable genitalia?
Good point. Really good point, actually.
Aliens don't have genitalia, but when you're saying aliens, I assume you're meaning gray aliens. When you get to late-stage hybrids and when you get to basically human-stage hybrids and hybrids, they have regular genitalia.
Yes. Professor, but as he mentioned, when we get descriptions of aliens, you know, typical grays, whatever, they don't have recognizable sexual features.
They do not, and I point this out in the book, actually, and I think I do. No reproductive organs, yeah. And you're talking about gray aliens now, and then the question is, how are gray aliens manufactured? See, I think that gray aliens are, in fact, hybrids themselves. I think that they were made out of the true alien DNA, probably from the insectolins, insect aliens, and they were bred to be a workforce, as is everybody on board the UFO. They're all part of a workforce. And the gray aliens, the one thing that bothered me about gray aliens, and I'll get to the sexual stuff in a second, the one thing that bothered me about gray aliens was their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand why they had a mouth. It's actually a slit for a mouth. They don't breathe. They don't eat through their mouths. They don't talk. It's all telepathic. They don't have any teeth. They don't have any tongue. They don't have an Adam's apple. What the devil do they need a mouth for?
Yeah.
And I can see ears. I can see holes for ears because if something falls over in a UFO, their attention has to be directed towards it. They hear a thump or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It seems to me that would make sense. But the ears and even the nose a little bit, just it bothered me. And then I realized that they're probably hybrids. They were bred not to reproduce themselves, but to be either continually hybridized as they become useless as time goes on, or else just cloned. And since I've written the book, I'm leaning more and more towards the cloned concept because they all look alike.
Okay. Caller, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you were referring to the distinct lack of sexual identification by physical attribute of the grays, right?
Yeah. You know, I always hear the stories and stuff, but, you know, we never hear about that feature of it. And I'm just wondering, how is this happening and how are the people or how is the women getting pregnant and stuff like that?
Oh, well, these are humans, or at least they begin that way. And these creatures are manipulating us, our DNA, producing these hybrids, if I'm understanding.
Sperm and egg.
Pardon me?
Yeah, taking sperm and eggs, putting them together.
Yep.
They then take the gamete or the zygote and they instill it into the woman's uterus. She gestates it for about 9 to 11 weeks. It's then removed and then placed in gestation tanks with liquid nutrients in rooms that I call incubatoriums. And I was all proud of myself when I wrote that in Secret Life, and that I invented this word incubatorium. And then I read some sort of, maybe it was the OED, a dictionary, and sure enough, there was a word called incubatorium. So I got their lassus with the leastus. But people are shown these things and said that their babies floating in there, that some of them were theirs and all that, and we don't know why they were shown that, maybe to make them start feeling attached to them for some reason or another, and then eventually they're removed when it's time. and that's it. Now there's something else. And the problem is getting the eggs. They will, what I discovered once was that this, that these beings would stare deeply into a female abductee's eyes. The female may be laying on a table, let's just say, and this gray alien, usually a tall one as opposed to a small one, would come and stare directly into her eyes at a distance of, well, touching foreheads or a couple of inches. And I would say to them, well, can you move your eyes back and forth, you know, to avert their gaze? No. Can you blink? Can you close your eyelids? No.
Okay, well, again, identifying this as an attempt at weak humor, that is what we human males do with female humans when we want to try to have a closer relationship with them. We stare at them and promise the moon and the stars and stuff like that, right?
This is different. This is hooking into the optic nerve, which is the only nerve that can be seen from the outside of the body, and using it as a conduit to travel to any other neurological sites in the brain. Because the key question to ask them at that point is, what's going on in your mind while they're doing this? And they'll say, well, he's looking at the last 2 weeks or what I was doing the last couple of weeks. He's looking at this. He's looking at that. And people sometimes would feel different things happening in their body, something going up and down their shoulders, or their arm would go up and down or whatever, and you see that he's hitting different neurological sites. But the other thing that shocked me, I must say, was one time I said to this woman who was describing an event happened when she was 16 years old, I said, well, what's going on in your mind? You know, what's happening? And she said to me, well, you know, I really like him. I really, really like him. He's really, I really like him. I hope he likes me, you know. And this is a 16-year-old sort of fawning over this bug-eyed monster alien staring into her eyes. And I realized at that point, as other women were beginning to say the same thing, only in different ways, that they were stimulating sexual response. And at the height of that stimulation of sexual response, they go down and take an egg. I originally thought, and I wrote in Good Life, that they were interested in human sexual response. That's what they were testing us. They were experimenting. They were interested in human sexual response. And the answer to that is they have no interest in human sexual response whatsoever, other than in some way it facilitates their taking of eggs. And I don't know how that is done. I don't know how that facilitates it. But that's what they do. I learned how to ask that question.
Well, I know it certainly facilitates the impregnation process in the human world. So I'm not really surprised at the way you're seemingly describing it. It is connected. I mean, come on. That kind of behavior, sexual stimulation, is used in the whole process of reproduction, so why wouldn't it be part of it? It makes absolute sense to me.
Well, but eggs are released from the ovaries regardless of intercourse.
Yes, 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 I know.
So, but that's why all I can do is say it facilitates them. Now, I was once told, or read an article about cows and in sexual being intercourse, I hate to even say that with a couple of cows, it does in fact stimulate an egg release with cows, but we're not cows, I have so many cases of that, literally hundreds, that you know that they're doing it for a reason. They don't care one bit about sexuality.
It makes sense to me. And even your reference to cows makes sense to me in view of the history of what they have done that we know about. All right, every line is full. Everything is ringing. We have so many people who want to talk to Professor Jacobs, and we'll try and get you all. Really, I'm going to lay heavily into the phones. So stay right where you are. Invasion is what we're talking about.
tell you that you came in the air of the cat.
The clock strikes 12, and Midnight in the Desert is pounding packets your way on the Dark Matter Digital Network. To call the show, please direct your finger digits to dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
And I'd like to add, we have a first-time caller line. If you have never called the program, you can call area code 775-285-5800. 775-285-5800. Once again, Professor David Jacobs. Welcome back, Professor. Good to have you. A lot of people want to talk to you, so I want to try and fit some calls in if we can do that. So let's do it. On the phone line, it's midnight in Butte, and you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Lucy in Montana.
Yes, ma'am.
I had a question about, well, there's some researchers like John Keel and Jack Vallée who don't think that the UFO phenomenon is necessarily extraterrestrial.
Right.
And their research has kind of led them to think that it's been around all throughout history, but it appears in different guises, and it's deceptive and reflective. And so it changes to reflect back the material to support the beliefs of investigators. And so my question for the doctor is, have you ever entertained the idea that maybe you're being used as a kind of tool by the phenomenon to push the extraterrestrial hybrid idea?
Good question, actually.
To cover up what it's actually doing?
Okay. Professor?
Yeah, well, if that's the case, I wouldn't know it, I guess. And but the problem here is that what you have is a phenomenon where everybody around the world says the same thing, and they say it to different researchers as well. It's not obviously to me, but if this were idiosyncratic, if this was just coming out of their minds, everything would be different. But because it's all the same, you know that they're all having the same experiences, and some of them just are remembered outright and are not working with anybody at all, and it's still the same. So the way I look at the world, I'm not like other people in that. I just look at it sort of as a world where 2 + 2 = 4, and nobody is living in another world, except of course our friends the aliens, but I just tend to look at it logically. I can't help but just looking for the logic in whatever they're doing or not doing, and I don't see them trying to fool me or trick me or make me think different things is within their within the way they think or act or do things.
So you're correlating what you're saying with what is being learned around the world.
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right, caller, does that answer it for you?
Well, there's one other thing.
Just something about the logic part of it. I was thinking that it's a really unclandestine move to abduct somebody on their way to meet with you, of all people. But also, like, with the pregnancy thing, with what we can do with cloning now, it seems like they would have figured out a more efficient way to get DNA from people than needing the egg thing and then to have them incubate it and then have to abduct them again. It's almost like they're doing it to draw attention to it, because they should, with such advanced technology, think that they would be able to hide it better or to cover up people's memories better, because our government showed decades ago that they could cover up memories and make them not able to show up in hypnosis. And so if they figured that out, I'm sure that this civilization would have figured it out too.
Okay.
Right. Well, actually, the salient thing you're saying there, which has always puzzled us from the very beginning, was why do they have to come back to women and to men and keep getting, well, especially women, keep getting
eggs
all the time? Because what you've got is, a couple hundred thousand follicles, of which only maybe 500 may actually become eggs. But they could take those follicles and just, incubate them in some way and make them into full-fledged eggs and only have to do that to a woman once. Why wouldn't they? And the answer is we don't know the answer to that, but there must be some logical reason. The situation is that they don't tell us anything ever about what they're doing in terms of technology or experimentation or testing or anything like that. We have no knowledge of this. After all these years, after year after year after year of doing these for decades and decades, we still do not know what goes on during all the table procedures. Quite frankly, I don't care because I think I know enough. But I think it's mainly a neurological examination, and I do notice the neural engagement with the optic nerve. And one time they ran a flat object under a person's foot, and the foot flexed, and I recognized that as a reflexive test, you know. But most of the other things they do, we have no idea what they do. And when it comes to technology, using technology, it's just zero. We have zero knowledge of the technology they use, the lights they use, the this they use, the that they use on people. And once again, if this were psychological, we'd know people would just tell us what they are. But
okay, Professor, I've got a question. We have mapped the human genome, right?
Yep.
It doesn't mean we know everything, but we've mapped it. Have we done enough to recognize a engineered change?
There has to be an engineered change in every abductee for them to be able to receive, to talk telepathically. Being a telepath, being able to speak or hear telepathically, is not part of the human condition.
No, it isn't.
And if it was, we'd live in a different world. And if only, as I try to tell people, if only 1% of humans in America or in any country were telepathic, were truly telepathic, we'd live in a different world.
Well, if it's going to go the way you're suggesting it's going to be a pretty different world pretty soon anyway. Skype, you're on the air with Professor Jacobs. Hello.
Hello, is it me?
Yes, you.
Okay. can you hear me all right?
I hear you fine, sir.
Okay, I've got two things, first for you and then for Professor Jacobs. On the mega structures.
Yes.
Everybody assumes that it's something between us and the star. But what if it's like a giant sunspot or something that's on the sun itself?
Well, then they wouldn't be seeing the irregular dips in luminosity that they're observing. That's a whole, you know... We're often a different. We need to talk about the story you're talking about, right? But not right now.
Okay. I thought that you said earlier.
Well, it's a big deal, sir. It's okay. Breaking news. And so is the collider news. But we've got Professor Jacobs on right now, and I wouldn't put an invasion exactly down as, you know, minor news. It's big. So what have you got?
Right. Okay. For Professor Jacobs, King Tut. I saw a picture where he had a stillborn child, and, I mean, to me it looked like the spitting image of a gray. And supposedly his father, I think it was Tutmosis or something, was a very strange-looking guy. I mean, he had an elongated head, and then we've got the elongated skulls from Peru and South America. So you think they could have been working on this hybrid thing for a really long time?
Okay.
No, the evidence just doesn't go back that far. You know, the thing is that if you keep creating hybrids and you're doubling your efforts every time somebody gets married and there's, you know, eventually everybody's going to be a hybrid, it seems to me. I'm sure, I don't mean hybrid, I mean abductees. Eventually everybody will be an abductee if you keep doubling abductees just through marrying non-abductees. And it would probably take a couple of centuries. I had a guy work it out once, a mathematician, and he said it would take 7 generations. But let's just say it takes 20 generations or whatever. That means if it started in the year 5,000 BC, you know, by the year 4,000 BC, everybody would have been an abductee. And if it started... You know, in the 14th century, by the 17th century or 16th century, everybody in the world will be abducted. So it's it doesn't go back that far, because we know that there's only a
What, Professor, is your best guess?
Of how many abductees there are?
No. How far back it began?
Bud Hopkins did a session with an older guy who was a kid in the 1920s and did an abduction event in the 1920s, plus a whole bunch of other ones when he was older. I did, with two different women, I did sessions when they were young in the 1930s.
Okay. So somewhere in there, 20s, 30s, in that area?
When I was doing research for my dissertation in Jim and Coral Lorenzen's APRO headquarters in Tucson, I read a letter about a kid who was visiting his grandparents' house. His parents had brought him there in 1917. And he was fooling around in the back area. There was a wooded area, and he came across a large silver object that was round that was on the ground. And then he noticed that there were three little people who were looking at him. And he turned around, and he ran home, and they ran after him, he said, and they didn't catch him, and he ran home. Well, that's abductee speak. That's an abductee story. They were there for a reason. He was there for a reason. Something happened, and then he forgot what happened, and then he ran home.
So yeah, I get it. So you're still guessing around the 20s or the 30s, early 1900s.
This event took place in 1917, and the guy who wrote just said he just thought that they'd like to know. This was in the
early 1900s. Early 1900s.
And then I met people who had a family history. Three generations of abductees were standing in front of me, is what it boiled down to, at a conference I was at. And they talked about their great-grandfather who had this unusual experience with a family story. He, in some way, found himself in a dark area, a cave, they thought, and so he ran out. And then he, quote, fainted in a field, and when he woke up, there was a giant rabbit staring into his eyes. And this is a family story. And then there was the 1896-1897 mystery airship wave, which is somewhat correlated to that, too. So that's why I say, with not much certainty, but a little bit, we could say it might go back to the late 19th century, last quarter of the 19th century, and with more certainty to the teens, and with a lot more certainty to the 20s and 30s, and obviously to the 40s when everybody was starting to see UFOs all over the place. But and you have to remember, though, that the UFOs are basically their workshops. They're carrying aliens who are doing their work. We used to think that they're visiting, that they're...
All right, here's another question for you then. If it began in the early 10s or 20s or 30s, whatever, somewhere back there, how far through their agenda do you think they are now?
I don't know that, because I don't know how many people they started out with. My guess is that it was random.
Or how many they need.
Or how many they needed, but it is global. You have to keep that in your mind at all times.
I will. Professor, I'll also keep in mind we've got people wanting to talk to you globally. Here's Johnny. Johnny, where are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm in London. Good evening, Arthur.
London, hi.
Jacobs.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. I did read your book, and I recall back in 2000, The Threat. But, Professor Jacobs, do you recall... in your book, The Threat, that you were talking, taking a patient back in an hypnotic regression, and they stated that they were on the table on a UFO with a few grey-like beings around her, but also a tall, Ming-like human being that wore a skull cap and had beard, as in like Flash Gordon-looking sort of Ming. Now, I understand, though, that your regression, that this Ming being made it known to you that he was aware that you were regressing the patient's memory, and that you were in fact being monitored, and he was aware of you during her abduction. Do you recall this incident, and can you elaborate on the details of what this being told you?
I don't recall that. I'll have to go back and I haven't read that book in 15 years. I'll have to go back and look at that. But however, if that happened, that person would have been a hybrid. And he might have known that the person who he was dealing with was working with me, and that would not be good. That would be bad. And I was and probably telling her to tell me to stop it or something like that, or trying to get her to stop it. And that goes on quite a bit, actually. They all know that they figure out that the abductees who are working with researchers are security risks. They're the ones who are saying things that they shouldn't be saying. Right. They are breaking the bounds of secrecy. And so they get them to stop. Now, looking like Ming, you have to be very careful with abductees' testimony on how aliens look. They can fabulate there very easily. I once had a case where Abraham Lincoln showed up at a person's bedside, and he was Abraham Lincoln, and he had a beard, and he had his stovepipe hat on, and he was wearing a frock coat and all the rest of that stuff. And that's confabulation, because as we went through the events that happened to her, he realized that she realized him herself that that was not Lincoln, that was just this gray alien. So you have to be a little bit careful with that, and I'll have to go back and look and see exactly what I said in the book. But knowing about people who are spilling the beans,
right,
who are security breaches, is something that they are always aware of. And because they look into this person's mind and they can see she's been talking to me or talking to another researcher. So far, it has meant very little. But when hubris started coming down and moving in, security went sky high. I never saw anything like it. Nobody had ever said anything like what security was like once the hubris were introduced into apartments and abductees were taking them to stores and this and that. And so it was a much lighter sequence of events years ago than it is now.
All right, Professor, here we go again. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello, first-time caller.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello, this is Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, I'm in Oakland, California.
Yes, sir.
And I have a question for Dr. Jacobs. Have you ever pondered the concept that maybe there is no grand design or grand scheme behind why the abductions themselves are happening, that maybe what really is going on is we are a stop along the line in a school curriculum where they show up, they do this thing to people, and they're graded? You know, it's just like people being, you know, going through a biology class and they have to dissect a frog or something like that.
Well, I guess that there's a possibility of that, except that the phenomenon just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding in very logical ways. You get the sense that they've done this before. That we are, I asked the question in the book.
You mean like on other planets?
Yeah. Are we the very first planet ever to be taken over, let's just say, through hybridization? And I give reasons why that is not possible, that we are the first. Not possible. So there's more to it in the background that we don't know. But trying to put concepts in their minds that I haven't heard, it may be true. But
well, I mean, if you really stop and think about it, Professor, if you wanted to create an empire in system and planet after planet after planet, this is exactly how you would do it.
I actually address that a little bit in the book as well, that planetary acquisition might in some way increase their value. It benefits them in a geopolitical way.
Of course, in the same way that every dictator has tried to take over the world, it's exactly the same psychology. And it also goes down the road of, well, they might not be the nice guys everybody hopes they are. Skype, Don, you're on the air.
How's it going? Can you hear me okay?
Fine, yes.
My question for Mr. Jacobs, two questions actually.
Professor Jacobs.
Professor Jacobs, my apologies. These hubrids, I was curious to know how human are they? Do they have any type of emotions? I mean, is it possible their human side could overtake their other side, and they decide they want to be human more than whatever it is they are. Hmm. And the second question is about DNA. I think you touched on it a little bit earlier about the genome. I was just wondering if there is any evidence or, you know, anomalies with these hybrids, if they've done a lot of DNA testing, and your thoughts on that.
Yeah, we've done no DNA testing with hybrids. That's the one thing. That's the holy grail. That's what we want. We want DNA. I got to have DNA. Please send me some DNA. The thing is, though, let's see, the first part of your question was what again? The
hybrids, how human are they? Do you think it's possible they could want to be like us more than what they are?
I also talk about that in this this book, Walking Among Us, that I have. That's the hope that we have. But they might come out to be wonderful, happy, true Americans, you know, just perfect in every way. There's one problem, though, and the problem is that they can control us and we can't control them. And as I keep saying, it makes us a second-class species. It's not like we're chimpanzees, but they're the first class species, and we are below them, and therefore they would get whatever they wanted from us, and we would not be able to do that to them, and that makes me, let's just say, uneasy. I don't like that. I want to be a first class species and have them as a second class species.
The whole thing makes me uneasy. I'm trying to get to these people. Hello there. You're on the air with Professor Jacobs.
Hello. Hi. Me?
Yes, you.
Okay. First of all, I have some information for you regarding the case you talked about a little while ago. The guy's name was Jeffrey Allen.
Oh, no, don't give me the name, please, though I know you can. What he's referring to, Professor, is the hybrid found in the car. Is that correct, caller?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Other than giving me the name, tell me the rest of it.
Okay. Well, he was found with like 1,200-plus guns, over a ton of ammunition.
Oh, yeah.
The person that reported the case left town and had our attorney contact the police. And for about a week and a half, there were several stories, and all of a sudden, there was nothing in any of the media in Southern California about
it. Okay. Where does the hybrid part come in?
He claimed to be an undercover alien hybrid secret agent working with the CIA.
And this was in a note left behind?
Yes. It was partly contained in a note and partly from what he allegedly told his girlfriend, Catherine, before he apparently committed suicide.
Wow. I knew there was something like that. I knew there was something in the news. I just couldn't remember the exact details.
Right. He claimed to be a human-alien hybrid secret agent working for the U.S. CIA.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for that, Professor.
Well, this sounds like a mentally ill person to tell you the truth.
Maybe.
I would never use that word. They don't even know that word. And, maybe they're learning it now, but the discussion of hybrids is not a normal discussion in American households.
No.
But they wouldn't know that word. And they would never say that. And they wouldn't have 1,200 guns.
Well, now, wait a minute. You were talking
back on a UFO.
You were talking earlier about mind influence. We, at that point, discussed the fact that they could control minds to the point that they could perhaps have somebody commit suicide, right?
I don't know if they could go that far.
Well, jump off a cliff.
Anything is possible. I don't know if they could go that far, but I don't want to know. I don't want to have that, I don't want to see that happen.
Well, but nobody does.
But they can, in fact, control people very, very well. Very well, indeed.
Okay. All right. First time caller line real quick. You're on the air. Going once. Yes, hello.
Yes. Hey, I was wondering if by any chance this could lead us to the mark of the beast.
Hmm. Okay, so the religious angle of it, Professor, the mark of the beast, 366, all that stuff.
Right. Well, you know, this happens to people who are religious, people who are not religious, people who are ministers, people who aren't ministers, people around the world who have no idea what the mark of the beast is. And not only that, but the aliens themselves do not know religion. They don't understand it. They don't get it. Nor do they know music. They don't get music either. They don't understand it. Or all sorts of things that you would think would just they would know automatically, but in fact they have to sort of learn what it is. So I don't think it has any biblical implications. I think it's an entirely alien phenomenon.
Well, maybe, but you know, if they don't know music, I feel sorry for them. That is
right.
It's losing a lot. Mike on Skype, very quickly. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. All right.
Hello, sir.
I've got a great insight here.
Okay, you're not connecting well, so stay close to the mic.
Okay. Your mind forgets when you sleep.
I'm sorry, Mike. I'm not going to be able to hold the call. I appreciate the effort, but you're just not making it. Let's go to the phones real quick. And hello, you're on the air with Dr. Jacobs. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, yes, go ahead.
Hi, from Iowa.
Okay, Iowa.
Hello, from Iowa. This is John.
Yes, John.
I have a question for Dr. Jacobs.
Fire away.
Okay.
They had an incident in Russia where there were a bunch of elites throwing a party, and it looks like the power went out suddenly, and when it did, a bunch of these people's eyes lit up, just like their retinas lit up, and it so startled the guests that many of the guests took off as a result. And there was a band member who spoke about this later, and it's on a YouTube video.
Yeah. I heard something about this.
Just quick question. And then the other thing, I don't think that the theory of these entities interfere at all with blowing up the religious idea for the Christian Bible, because most of that stuff is mentioned that, you know, if you take the creator aspect, that something created those entities as well, and apparently they do have an evil abduction or sexual some of the experimentations they do with children, including implants, would make their actions very, very evil and suspicious, and I don't think it's in conflict with the Bible at all.
Professor?
Well, I keep out of all the religious arguments. I get, you know, material about the Bible almost on a daily basis from people, and there are some, you know, parallels and this and that, but I just sort of stay basically to what people tell me about what's happening to them, and my job is to say what I pretty much think I know, and knowing full well that I could certainly be wrong about a lot of things.
Well, what you think you know is already bad enough, Professor. Hold on. I mean, for us. So, personally, I hope you're wrong, but I have this nagging, weird little feeling that you might not be. Midnight in the Desert. I'm Art Bell. Stay right there. Professor David Jacobs is my guest. Good evening. It's good to have you all with us. I want to remind you the first-time caller line is area code 775-285-5800. The public line is area code 952-225-5278. And I want to remind the professor, but inform you, then a few days after I did the interview with you, maybe the next day, God, it was close, doctor, I interviewed Nick Redfern, and I'm telling you, he laid out point after point after point to the point I've said, are you working with Dr. Jacobs? Are you aware of Redfern's work?
I'm not that much aware of it. In fact, I just ordered his books from Amazon. I know he does things with Men in Black, and I've never encountered that. hybrids or humans would not wear black all the time. They would stand out. They would not be able to blend in. It would be bizarre. I'd like to see what he comes up with. We'll be talking together at a conference. I think the International UFO Conference in Laughlin this year coming.
Well, trust me, you need to talk to him.
Yeah. Does he do hypnosis with abductees or?
Not that I'm aware of, but he's got a lot of information that coincides awfully closely with what you're telling me. So I just talk to Nick and let me know how it works out.
Okay,
Dale on Skype, you're on the air with the professor. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell. Awesome to talk to you. Great show tonight and made especially better since we had to wait a day for it. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, well, okay. I almost blamed some of it on the show, but go ahead.
Okay, a couple of things. First, I think we have a planetary defense lead here on the DNA because it will be different base human DNA, and we should be able, if we could keep a project secret, to find out how it's different and perhaps engineer a bug that would eat those. War of the worlds kind of thing.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned that's dead right on, and I'm sure the professor agrees, we need DNA proof. Now, I don't know if that's going to be obtainable. I don't know that we are refined enough in the way that we look at DNA that we could even recognize such a change. Professor?
Well, it would be good to give it to a DNA specialist and see if he can find anything that looks odd or different or anything at all. There's got to be some sort of difference, and once again, neurology, that's where the main thing would be.
I agree.
The problem here is that there's not enough people who are working on this subject to be able to do this. In other words, if we had 100 people who did abduction research, who were scientists and who knew what to do and who could go to a person's house after a session and find out, you know, if the hybrid ate anything and wiped his mouth on a napkin.
Good point.
Is the napkin still there? Is there DNA there? You know, that's the way we would find it, it seems to me. And I never even asked those things, of course, and it just, you live and learn. You know, you go along and things occur to you later on, and that's because there aren't a whole lot of people who do this kind of research. And everybody who does this kind of research, absolutely everybody, is an amateur, including me. And consequently, we need guidelines, and we need people who can do DNA analysis and would not charge us $1 million to do it, do it gratis, well, hopefully.
For the human race.
For the human race, right. I mean, there's so many different things. I mean, the whole thing is so nutty in the fact that I'm a professor, a retired professor of history, not of science. I'm not working for the government. I'm not working for anybody. I'm retired. And I'm doing this research it's possibly the most important research ever to happen in the history of humankind. I do think that this is the greatest existential threat that's ever happened. And I look around, and there's a few other people doing it. There's Kathleen Martin, there's Yvonne Smith, there's Jed Turnbull, there's a couple of others. But not enough. Not enough, and not heavy hitter scientists who have contacts with other scientists who can set up bridges to doing DNA and this and that. I mean,
I'm with you. All right. Dale, we still have Dale. Go ahead, Dale, if you have anything else.
Yeah, the other thing was, Professor, last show you were saying that a rare few people, when the mind control started, were able to snap out of it and not be controlled. From your experience with hypnosis, would it be able would we be able to install a key that if someone detected the onset of that mind control, it would give them a rush of rage or something that would snap them out of it?
I tried this once early on. What I did was I had a person draw dots on his chest with different colored ink or pencils or something. And I knew that they would notice that the gray aliens, in those days I thought everything was gray aliens, and that the gray aliens would look at that and ask him, what's this? Or, you know, are you sick or something or whatever, you know, that's something they never saw. And that then would open his mind to ask a question that we had agreed upon.
Uh-huh.
And it worked. They said, what's this? He remembered, oh, that's right, I've got to ask that question. And he didn't exactly snap out of it, but he suddenly was in a different mental state. Then he became frightened that if he asked the question, they would know that he was knowing what was going on, and he got scared at that, so he didn't say anything.
What is that called, Professor? A post-hypnotic suggestion?
No, because it was the dots were on his chest.
Yes, I understand that, but the fact that he is reminded of that in a post-hypnotic state, that...
Well, yes, I didn't order him. I just said that this would probably... Let's see if this works.
Right.
I wasn't giving him any post-hypnotic suggestions. Last about 15 minutes at most.
That was the best I could do. I don't know what it's called. That's why I asked.
Yeah, but it's such an odd situation in that his mind is being controlled by these beings. But I tried it with somebody else who asked, who did manage to ask a question. And the question was this dumb, stupid question, which was, do you sleep? This was early on. And she reported back to me that they said that we always sleep, or we're always asleep, or something like that. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. But now that I look back on it, I realize that was confabulation. They probably didn't say that. She probably just picked that up out of her own mind.
Okay.
Don't ask me how I know that, but I know it.
All right, let's go outside the country. I think all the way to Romania. Hello.
Well, I've got a question for Professor Jacobs.
Go ahead.
The question is, what if we've been planted here thousands of years ago to serve their procreation process later on when we reach the, let's say, sufficient numbers? Or I don't know. I mean, we could be a tool for them.
That's actually a pretty interesting question. We were placed here by them for procreation for this very future purpose. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Professor?
Now, once again, anything is possible, but the problem here is that you do have an archaeological record that is continually being filled in by the finding of bones. Archaeology, or physical anthropology, rather, is bone-driven, you know, and the more you learn about more bones you find, the more you learn about early humans. And there were different types of early humans, one of which arose above the others. It's not just a tree. It's not just a line of, you know, early humans and then more modern humans and more modern and then us. It's more like a bush where you have early humans, they just sort of died out for various reasons, and other kinds of humans that died out, and then the Homo sapiens took precedence. So there is that record, and it goes back millions of years. So there is the suddenness of the growth of the brain, but that's always been explained through a mutation that took place in the brain, which helped the brain to grow and the cerebellum and all the rest of this stuff, and then they've created modern humans.
Either that or the obelisk.
Either that or the obelisk.
Sorry, I just can't resist every now and then. First time caller line, you're on the air with Professor Jacobs. Hello. Going once. First time caller line, going twice. Gone. Too bad. Chance missed. Roanoke, I think you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, Art, great to hear from you. I retired in July, and I heard you were coming back on, and great timing.
Well, I started back up in July, so there you go.
Yeah.
Synchronicity of some sort.
I've been studying this cattle mutilation stuff for the last 20 years, since Linda Moulton Howell started out with it.
Yes, sir.
And I think it's tied directly in with this hybrid thing.
So do I.
Yeah.
I've got this feeling that early on they were looking at mammals, specifically cows, and the reproductive system and all the rest of it. And that if you remember, that's exactly one of the main areas of interest. Those areas were cut out, you'll recall.
Right.
So I'm with you. I don't know about the professor, but I'm with you. I see a relationship.
Well, it just stands to reason they take the same parts, and, you know, we're getting up to tens of thousands of cattle the last 30, 40 years. And
yes, sir.
They're making incubation parts.
I'm with you all the way. Professor, what do you think? Relationship? No relationship.
I don't know. I've always sort of kept my distance from crop circles and from cattle mutilations. Because I don't think that there's enough evidence that they're aliens. If, however, aliens are doing it, it's a peripheral event. It might be ultimately, although they're not taking the whole cow or the whole horse or whatever, but it might be to produce food. But then again, there's so many hybrids around. I don't think there's enough.
Professor, you need to look more carefully into the records that this gentleman is talking about. They specifically excised, in fact, surgically, Linda Moulton Howe really goes into this, the sexual parts of cows and the reproduction system. And it was done in a way that humans literally couldn't do it. And that's what this gentleman is referring to. It could have been early research just as we experiment on rats, right?
Right, but it wouldn't be early research because abductions are already going on.
Well, yeah.
And the whole program is already in effect.
Right, caller?
The hybrid stuff started in the early 60s or somewhere in there.
Oh, no.
I mean, the abduction started a lot earlier, but not the hybrid thing.
No, the hybrids, well, professor, that's a good question, actually.
Well, mutilations kind of started at the same time.
All right.
It is a good question, and as I said, Bud Hopkins first ran across it in the early 1980s, and so therefore it must have started earlier than that. And so it could have started at the beginning of the phenomenon itself, which might be the early 20th century or late 19th century. And the question is, were they producing hybrids? Or were they beginning to produce hybrids, the ones who are going to be moving in? And,
right.
And we don't know. Once again, I'm sorry to keep saying we don't know for every question that's asked.
No, when you don't know, that's what you need to say.
I wish I knew more. But the fact is, though, that it could be that they didn't start producing the ones who are moving in until relatively recently.
Recently,
it's always possible.
Okay. Very quickly, back outside the country somewhere. Hello, Mario.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Australia, I take it. Yes, fine.
Yes, that's right. I'd like to run a hypothetical for you. So let's just say tomorrow you get the DNA confirmation for yourself, and you find out what you're saying is 100% spot on. Knowing that they've been doing it for so long, and chances are they've probably infiltrated government, media, probably lots of different places.
Agreed.
Where does it leave us? What can we honestly do?
Are you familiar with the initials SOL?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, well, may not have made it to Australia. In other words, probably not left in a good place. Professor?
There's really not a whole lot we can do. We're dealing with an advanced technological group, and we could try to bomb them with atomic bombs, but of course we don't know where they are, and the whole thing is, when you have technology that requires invisibility, it's really tough to set the Army or the Air Force on them. There's not a whole, even if we find out, even if scientists figure out how to stop abductions, they might, because they're so technologically advanced, they might, the aliens might find a workaround around whatever we do.
All right, Professor, look, our show is ending. This could go on and on and on, and I'm assuming what you're documenting will go on and on and on, but your book is called Walking Among Us, and if people want to know more, that's what they should do, is get your book. In the meantime, we'll certainly have you on again, but my God, what a night. I really thank you for being with us. Anything else you want to plug or say before you go?
No, whoever wants to start doing this research, learn how to do it and do it. Help me.
You definitely need help, Professor, and I mean that in the most scientific of ways. Thank you for being here. Again, it has been my pleasure. Kind of a worrisome topic, kind of. Very worrisome invasion. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good night, sir. Okay, that's it for tonight. We really could have gone on. My God, what a program. So, good night, everybody. All the time zones around the world. It's been a pleasure being with you. And I've enjoyed serving man. I'm sorry. Can't help it. Good night, everybody. See you tomorrow night.